Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to Food and Loathing, a podcast dedicated to dining in Las Vegas on every level, from home cooking clubs to VIP food festivals and everything in between. We come to you each and every week from the sports, entertainment, and dining capital of the civilized world, basically just the best place to have fun, and we like to talk about the foodie fun you can have here. And when I say we, I am referring to your two hosts and one engineer. That would be myself, my co-host Samantha Gemini Stevens, and our Chicago-based producer Rich Johnson, who is actually lurking in the background right now, but I don't know if we're going to hear him. He might be too busy stuffing his face with deep dish pizza or Italian beef sandwiches to even join us. But
that sounds really good right now.
Yeah, we're doing this one a little remotely. And yeah, Rich is around. We're not sure we're going to hear from him. But Gemini, we can hear you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was pretty mellow, if I remember correctly. I don't think I did a hell of a lot. I did add one great, fantastic brunch, which I'm going to tell you about shortly.
Oh, I'm excited.
So that was cool. But oh no, how about yours? Anything fun this weekend?
Very quiet. I just haven't been feeling well. So I've kept it really, really on the down low this weekend. But I do have a couple things to share that I'm excited about.
So we have a really huge show for you today. We're cleaning out the closet, as they say, of some interviews that were just a little too long for us to fit them into the last two shows. And they were a little too good for us to trim them down enough to get them into those shows. So that means at the center of today's show, you're going to hear extended interviews with Christopher Aralianis, who is the corporate executive chef for Q Restaurants. And it was recorded in their new location at the Fountain Blue. And you will also hear from James Beard Award-winning author Kim Foster talking about her new book, The Meth Lunches, and her upcoming appearance at UNLV. And then Gemini is going to take a deep dive into the Crush Pad Wine Bar. So all of that coming up dead center in this show. But before we get to any of that, we'd love to talk about where we've been dining in an effort to make you hungry and hopefully inspire you to try more Las Vegas restaurants. Maybe if Rich pops in, he'll inspire you to take a trip to Chicago. But mostly we're sticking to Las Vegas this week. It's a Vegas podcast, so let's start in Las Vegas. Gemini, have you had anything delicious since last we met here in podcast land?
I have. So after we recorded at Wino last week, I didn't get to go to the party that night. You know, my dog had dental surgery. She's fine, but it meant I didn't get to go anywhere. So I went back the next day with our friend, Chef Emily Brubaker, and we sat at the bar and we tried three amazing dishes. I don't know all the things you got to taste at the party, but I had to talk about this because we had this sturgeon rillette, which was just fantastic and textural and served with super thin, crispy chips, like with the ridges, fried perfectly. We also had the foie parfait, which was lighter than it had any right to be when you think about foie gras. And it's like one of my favorite things anyway. It's a throwback to their foie creme brulee at Sage. If you go back to last week's episode, you hear us talking to the chef. And it was just amazing. And it came with like this fig jam and some nuts. And so again, more textures, more flavors, super pop. Really, really enjoyed that. And then we also had this really, probably my favorite mix between almost like a smashed and blended like a baba ganoush. It's an eggplant roasted dish that they do. It's kind of smoky, but at the same time, it's got really fresh veg. So it's refreshing. It's bright. It's really satisfying. I didn't note the wines we had, but we let the bartender Somme kind of take us on a flight. So we tasted a little Cremant Bubbles first, then we moved on to a Chenin Blanc. And then from there, he took us into a really light, springy, summery kind of Pinot Noir. I mean, reds tend to get a little heavier, but this was not that. It was super delicious. Really light on the palate, but still super flavorful. So shout out to those guys. Thank you so much for having us back to check that out. And then Sunday, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago,
just for anybody, just want to remind people, all that food is by celebrity chef Sean McClain.
Yes.
Sean McClain is at Wino. He is the culinary backbone of Wino. We had him as our guest last week, and this is all in the Uncommons Project, right on Durango Drive.
And go check it out. It's not a massive menu, but it's got a lot of things on it. It's a little something for everybody. So really enjoyed the few bites that we had. So a couple weeks ago, my sister texted me. She really wanted to go to Lotus of Siam inside the Red Rock. She'd seen photos. She'd heard us talking about it. And so she said, please, can we go here? We haven't had dinner together in a while. I said, yes, absolutely. So we go over there, we take them in. They're, of course, awed by just the vision of the place. You walk in and it's tall and it's green and it's got the wood notes and it's got really nice warm lighting. And just walking in was an experience with them, which is a lot of fun.
If people out there only remember Lotus of Siam from the days when it was located in the commercial center,
right,
where you pretty much, it was in there with all of the sex clubs and all the crazy shit on East Sahara Drive, you will be pleasantly surprised. The food is just as good, but of course they're in two locations now. Neither one of them that I know of is very close to a sex club, but they're both really great, gorgeous locations. And the most recent of those two, of course, is the one at Red Rock Resort on Charles Boulevard out near Summerlin, where you were, which is just absolutely gorgeous.
Oh my gosh, so amazing. And so, you know, we walk in, we get great seating. We're in they have things sectioned off, so it feels like other rooms, but they're also not like closed off. So there's still some openness between all the different spaces, which I really appreciate. We were in the space that has all those beautiful ceramic jars up on the wall. And so that was just fun to look at, really, you know, colorful. So then comes the food, of course. And so we shared some lovely dishes, including the crispy garlic shrimp, which is the only fried shrimp dish from anywhere I've ever eaten. The shells. That's how good they do it. I know a lot of people from New Orleans and things like that. You know, you suck the head, you eat the shell. I'm not that person, but here I'll do it because it is so perfectly done.
And they're good for you. They give you strong bones.
Exactly. Calcium, baby. John got the crispy duck in the red curry, which is also one of our favorite dishes. It has just enough spice to, you know, kind of invite the timid, but also take care of the people who like spicy. It's just the perfect balance. Super rich, beautiful flavors. My sister Tanisha had the Penang curry, a favorite of mine for sure. She had hers with shrimp also. It's turning into a shrimp night, I'm telling you. My niece Apollonia had the crispy basil with shrimp. And that's where they do, you know, it's the sauce called crispy basil, and they do it with veg, and you can choose your protein. So she chose the shrimp on that one as well. I mean, the sauces on all three of these were really unctuous, full of flavor. And like I said, just enough spice for both the timid and the adventurous. If you want it hotter, they'll give it to you hotter. They'll bring you chilies, whatever you need. So, you know, if you're that person who wants to sweat, they will take care of you. We also had the Tom Kha with shrimp. And the reason I saved this for last is because it was probably the best part when they brought this fire laden pot to the table, and my niece had never seen it before. And she was just in awe. So she made sure I took all kinds of photos and video so she could have it for her own socials and say that, you know, I got to talk about her. So, she just loved it. And they had never had Tom Kha before, which surprised me. And, I feel like I've left them behind somewhere, and everybody just really it. So service was fantastic. My niece had a mocktail called a butterfly something, and it has that butterfly pea flower stuff in it that changes with citrus. It changes colors. John ordered a really great bottle of off-dry Riesling to go with the little bit of spice that we had. And then I tried a mezcal drink called My Best Friend or something along those lines. And it was really good. It's not huge. It's like a small child's glass or something, but super delicious, really, really flavorful. So shout out to the team over there because we had an amazing meal, amazing service, great drinks. You can't go wrong.
Cool. Yeah, I would love Lotus of Siam. They are fantastic. So cool. Glad to have you here. You had a good time. And actually, you got me thinking of some of the Thai food I've been eating recently. I don't know how much notes are in here. Looking over at Rich, doesn't look like he's ready to tell us anything today. So I think we're going to do this without him, and that's okay.
We love you,
what
Rich.
Do I have? Yes, Rich is all on the back end making sure it works. He's working so hard. He doesn't have time for this.
He is.
So it brings us to little old me. And as I should say, as I was just saying, I did some Archie's Tie over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell this story because it gives a little insight into what it's like to do what it is we do for a living. Right. So I get contacted by a lot of people. They want me to write a best of for the city, do the best of this, the best of that, whatever. I'm always happy to do it as long as they're, you know, decent people who are doing it and they, have, you know, and they let me use my own criteria. Right. So I got somebody reached out to me from DoorDash and they have their own blog. Right. And so they said, you know, do you want to do a list of recommendations of places that are on that, you know, that you would recommend that do DoorDash delivery? And I was like, I don't really know how many of the restaurants that I would recommend do DoorDash delivery. Right. Like that's
right.
Just, you know, a lot of people don't for not putting anybody down, whatever. There's whatever the business arrangements, the arrangements for getting the food to people's house, you know, whatever. People just have reasons. Chefs have reasons. Not everybody uses it. So for me, I decided, okay, you know, here's the deal. I'll see who uses DoorDash, which was really a pain in the ass to do, but you know what? There's all good. It's part of the job. It's what we do, right?
That's right.
So went back and researched it, looked up all the Neon Feast restaurants, wanted to see which of them were on DoorDash. And I sent them over my list of maybe about 25 to 30 restaurants, probably a little over 30 actually, that I would recommend that I thought were good. So what always happens whenever you're dealing with an editor, they always send you back like, okay, those are great. You use all of those, but hey, you know, we really like these places. You know, would you be willing to also recommend these joints?
Right.
And that's fine too, right? Like, you know, you work with your editors, whatever the reason is, if the food's good, you know, I will recommend it. Now, I'm not going to take 30 or 40 restaurants that they recommended and go visit them all to see if the food's good. But if the places that I knew and they don't happen to be on Neon Feast just yet because not enough people recommended them, they didn't get an overwhelming number of recommendations, I certainly was willing to entertain them. So they sent me back a very, very small list. I think it had four restaurants on it, I'm thinking. Anyway, okay. And a couple of them were places that I knew really, really well. One of them was one that I didn't know, but I was willing to visit. It was a coffee shop and I was like, okay, cool. Another one was a really brand new restaurant that I actually talked about here on this show because I went and visited. It was a Korean restaurant. All cool. And then Archie's Thai was the other one. And I'm like, well, I fucking like Archie's. I've eaten at Archie's a lot over the years. Like, I'm kind of surprised it's not on Neon Feast. I'm kind of surprised that, you know, I must have been the only person who voted for it, which is why. So I was like, well, you know, I want to check it out because I remember liking it, but it's been, you know, a while since I've eaten there. So Sue and I have had Archie's Thai a couple of times within the past few weeks. So I did it again this past week. I tried some other dishes that I hadn't had in a while or maybe never even had from them. And everything was really, really good. So I am going to write up Archie's Thai. I liked it enough. And I would say I had a seafood pancake that really surprised me. You don't see those that often in Thai restaurants, right? That kind of omelet batter that they then throw every type of seafood into it. And fry it up nice and fucking crispy. And I had, it had mussels in it, squid in it, crispy and so fucking good. And I really, really
changed my mind. I'm going from the Chicago beef to that.
So we did Archie's Thai again, man. This is what you do when you're in this business. You got to make sure you can throw your stamp of approval on it. Yeah. I am happy. Now, I would say I would not put it up against Lotus as I Am. I still happen to think Lotus as I Am is a much, much, much better restaurant, but they also don't deliver as far as I know. Maybe they do, but not through DoorDash that I could find, right? So otherwise, they would be on my list because I ran every restaurant that I love through there. So anyway. I was really happy with the list. I'll be giving you guys a link to it when it finally comes out. But the one good thing it did was it got me back to trying Archie's Thai again, which I haven't tried in a while. And I did enjoy the restaurant. So I would recommend that if you haven't been, you know, they have locations all over Las Vegas. There's four or five locations. They've been doing it since before anybody was doing Thai. They've been doing Thai in Vegas since even before the Lotus as I Am, at least before this family that runs them now were doing it, right? So it's an old timers joint. And I would definitely say give them a shot, go in, try their food. It was good.
It's solid. It's consistent.
Yeah, you've I know told me about trips there recently. So
So
I am happy to sneak that one onto my list as well, and we'll see if it makes it onto Neon Feast. And that is how you work when you're either a freelancer or a guy like me who is shamelessly pimping out Neon Feast anywhere I can.
Nothing shameless about it, baby. Be proud.
I have no shame. It's interesting you mentioned our visit to Wino last week, because I was there, of course, with you for the recording. And then I returned for their grand opening party. It was great. We had some nice bites. Sean McClain's food's fantastic. But several of us, including a chef friend of ours who was there, we were all talking about how, yeah, this is party food. It's early. It's 6 o'clock, but we're going to be hungry later. So we all decided we were going to get Al Antico Vinaio. So a lot of us dropped by Al Antico Vinaio on our way home. That is in on Commons, of course. Joe Bastianich has brought it to America. They have a few American outposts. It's Italy's most popular sandwich shop, supposedly. So this was my first visit back since attending their insane grand opening party, where had people lined up around those little Uncommons blocks. They were like, you know, a couple blocks long. And damn, you know, this is my first time back, and it is fucking great. The first thing you notice on these sandwiches is that super thick focaccia bread. It's amazing. But you do worry when you see it. Like, is this going to overshadow the fillings? Am I going to be able to taste what's on here, right? Well,
that's always my worry.
Yeah, have no fear, man. You could taste everything. I had a sandwich that they called the Odd Couple, and it was a thick layer of very thinly sliced porchetta. Now, let's say when I say thick layer, I'm not talking about like one of those New York City deli sandwiches where all you see is the meat and a little bit of bread. This was still the bread was the bread's still the main thing that carries these sandwiches. But a thick layer of porchetta in there, and then topped with two spreads. Thus, the Odd Couple is the name. A gorgonzola cream spread and a pistachio cream spread.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and those are spreads that they use on various sandwiches. But you got fucking both of them on this one. And man, the gorgonzola, that sharp cheese, blue cheese taste, the pistachio, a little more sweetness to it, packed with rich flavors. I mean, I'm going to go so far as to use the fucking word umami here, which is not one of my favorite words, but it's the only way to describe the deep, diverse combination of flavors on this sandwich. So fucking good. And yes, I know at $14 to $20 a sandwich, these things are not cheap. But I got two meals out of my sandwich, and Sue got two meals out of her sandwich, because they are fucking huge. So,
that makes it totally worth it.
Yeah, and that's the deal, right? Like, if you cut the price in half and assume you're going to have a second sandwich as a leftover, this is well worth the price. Now, you're not going to finish one for lunch unless you have a much heartier appetite than I do, in which case you need to go here anyway, because you're going to be ordering two fucking sandwiches anywhere else, right? So I highly recommend Al Antico Vinaio. And that, again, is also in the Uncommons project on Durango, across from the new Durango Resort.
Amazing.
Where else? I went to the new Mad Hatter Tea Party pop-up at the Shady Grove Lounge at the Silverton.
Oh, fun!
Man, these Silverton pop-ups are always great, because Shady Grove is just a cool venue. It's got the Airstream trailer, bowling alley, foosball, Connect Four, a pool table. I just like the space. Maybe it's because back in my teenage years, I was a lifeguard at a campground in rural-esque New Jersey, and this gives me kind of flashbacks to that. But I really like all of their pop-ups, and I love this one. The food rarely moves the needle for me, but it's always good. It's always at a higher level than it needs to be. Considering it's just a cool venue. We're talking about charcuterie and cocktail glasses, you know, that kind of stuff. Ceviches, popcorn, sweets. They're all great for snacking on while you take in the vibe and sample the signature cocktails.
That's awesome.
And then, so go check that out. It's weekends only over at the Silverton, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I believe, as I was just writing it up. So, go check that out. And in the evenings, not, you know, I don't think you're going to day drink there, but go on the week. And I don't know how long it's there, but you know, it's this Eastery Alice in Wonderlandy kind of vibe.
How
so it's fun.
Fun
for a little while. My final big meal for the week, the new brunch at Ocean Prime. It is
so sad.
So fucking outstanding. This, I should say, is a restaurant that's on the Neon Feast app as one of the top seafood restaurants in Las Vegas, and as having one of the best views in Las Vegas, thanks to their amazing patio overlooking the insane intersection of the Strip and Harmon. Everything about this place is always spot on. Every steak I've had here has actually been extremely good. Quality meat, well-seasoned, well-prepared, treated with respect. But I'll admit that as a guy who only eats a couple steaks a year, I tend to seek a little more wow factor from my beef in the way of breeding, aging, feed, et cetera, right? So these are just great steaks. They're good. There's nothing. I mean, they're just really, really good steaks. You're just not getting a nose print or a story about how it ate ice cream on its last day on Earth or any of that shit. And I'm a sucker for that shit, right? So you know, for me, and you know, so I love this place for the view. I love it for its seafood. The steaks are very, very good though. What else did I have though? The seafood, as I said, man, you taste the ocean in every bite. I mean, you really feel like you are on a dock and, you know, in the Atlantic seaboard somewhere, getting stuff that just came in on the boats and everything from the chunks of the Dungeness crab in my seafood tower to the shrimps and the oysters and the lobster tails. There's just a simple, perfect taste of the sea to all of their seafood. And yeah, the salmon, by the way, was also great in a salmon salad. The crab benedicts are extraordinary.
Yes.
I'm a sucker for sweets and I love their brioche French toast. Desserts were also fantastic, simple, but good. Hell, I even love the yogurt parfait here. And I am not a yogurt parfait guy, right? as my gut will attest, anybody who's seen me in my double XLs knows that I'm not a yogurt parfait motherfucker. But even this one's good. The music, single guy playing the horn, pretty much perfect for the volume that you wanted out there. Service was excellent. Honestly, this is a deceptively simple brunch that is honestly one of my favorites in Las Vegas right now, despite not having a lot of the showy dishes that I tend to seek out in restaurants. Because everybody knows I'm a sucker for a dog and pony show, right? And other than the location, Ocean Prime, and actually a gorgeous dining room, but Ocean Prime's not a lot of dog and pony show. It's about quality, man. It's about like getting the things that you want a steak and seafood restaurant to be. And fucking damn, they're just spot on. Try this new jazz brunch on the weekends.
Coming up in the news, we've got Israeli opening at the Wynn. We have a Mediterranean brunch hitting the Southwest and a Monday night happy hour just for baseball fans. But before that, we dig into those extended interviews Al was telling you at the beginning of the show. This is Food and Loving.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here you are in Vegas, you're hungry, and the choices are endless. But do you really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. You want the strip, off strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
I sat down with Brian and Jessica Dinda, the wonderful married owners, somms behind the new Crush Pad Wine Bar on Sahara Avenue. They're in the Sahara Heart Plaza. They have a wine club, wines to go, nibbles, and, well, let them tell you.
Tell me a little bit about, like, Brian, I met you at Ada's, and then you were at Garagiste, and then one day you slyly slipped me this business card.
Yeah.
Tell me where this comes from and a little bit, just a little bit about your history in wine and what you're doing here.
Sure. Like you said, I started at Ada's and in this town, and I was a somm over there. And then I went to Garagiste for a little bit more variety. But deep in the recesses, Jessica and I had always had this idea of we want to create a space that we want to go to, that we're used to. You know, in our lives, we've been lucky enough to travel to a bunch of different countries. And I'm from New York originally, and there's this commonality of wine bars and enotecas and these places that were not found here. There's strip style wine bars, but there's something that we wanted to create here. And that's what we did. It took us a couple of years, 5 years from concept to now, but it was always in the back of our heads. COVID kind of threw it off a little bit. And, you know, in the last 2 years, we've been working solid to get this place up and running.
So did you, how long from getting this space to opening up did it take? Did you always have this space in mind? Did you have a deal with the guys at Partage?
No. So we started the discussion with the guys at Portage the end of last June, beginning of July. So that's when they were first deciding to move out of this space. And they had the opportunity to move their bar next to their restaurant. So that's where we could slide in, which was really great.
Yeah, and we were, one of the things about when the shutdown happened was that we, you know, prices skyrocketed on just supplies and building supplies and stuff like that. So we were like, you know what, we're gonna look slowly. We're not gonna be super aggressive at it. So in doing that, we're gonna find a place that has everything that we want in it. And, you know, it kind of paid off in that when these guys were ready to move over into that the new space, this had, we knew we were gonna have to do a lot of remodel, but it had everything we want. It's got a kitchen, it's got a patio, it's got enough floor space, the bar space is big enough. So I think waiting really kind of paid off for us.
I really love the openness. I love that, you know, you've taken down some of the interior wall feeling of it. Did you always know you wanted to do it closer to like the west side of town, or did you have other spots in mind?
That's funny. We, you know, originally, because we started off living in Henderson, and then a couple of years after that, we moved to Summerlin side, and we liked both, and we were just like, well, if only we could get someplace in the middle, you know, someplace like, and originally, believe it or not, we were looking to be in the Uncommons. And they went with Wino instead of going with us. And we're like, okay, well, that'll just, you know, we'll look someplace else. And then this place right in the middle of everything, and we like to say centrally located now, you know, is exactly in the place that I think we wanted.
Yeah.
You know?
It's amazing. So you have a classic wine list, you have a curious wine list. I mean, you and I have known each other for years. You know I love the curious stuff. Tell me a little bit about that decision.
So I think there are people in the industry or that go to wine bars, right, that are one of two types. The people that want to have the same experience all the time and know that they can go to a place and they can get their Pinot Grigio, or they can get their Cabernet Sauvignon from Napa, or wherever it is, and it's going to be the same every time. That's not a bad thing, that's that type of person. But then there are the other people, like yourself, that are gonna want to have, you know, something a little different every time you come in. And we wanted to be able to, because knowing where we are, close to Summerlin, but also close to downtown, we wanted to be able to serve both of those people or both of those groups of people at the same time.
And so, Jessica, you and I were chatting just a little bit earlier. You're going to be offering classes and things like that. How can you describe your vibe for what you're trying to put together?
Sure, absolutely. When I think about taking a wine class, I want to have a good time. Anytime I go to a wine bar, no matter where I am, I make a friend. Right? That's kind of how wine people are. We have an experience together. Ooh, we both like this thing. Well, so the table we're sitting at seats 12. So the classes will be 12 people. That's it. You can see, it's not really deep. The goal is that we want to cultivate conversation and laughter and fun. And we want to tell fun stories about wine. We're going to give you some education. And most of that education is about understanding what you like and what you don't like. Because both those pieces of information actually help you order wine no matter where you go. And the idea is, how do you explain that? A lot of times that's hard. So that's one of the things we want to do, is teach people to say what they like and what they don't like.
I love that so much, because whenever I'm hanging out with somebody new or I have friends who are not sure what to talk about, I say, just talk to the sommelier, talk to the bartender, tell them what you like and what you don't like, and they will, if they're good at it, figure it out. And again, that's how I met Dinda. So tell me a little bit about some of your design choices here. So before it was, you know, full of barrels and things like that, and I'm not faulting those guys at all. It had its own unique voice. It was a really cool space. You've really opened everything up here. I mean, I can see from this back wall with the wine behind me, I could see all the way over across to the other side.
I think when you sit in this space, I don't want to close people in. I want there to feel like you're, it's great to have a little nook, and we have that. We have a little lounge nook. When I think about the kind of space I want to sit in, I was very intentional about the pieces we chose. We were just talking about this table, mm-hmm. you know, fallen wood that's not going in the landfill. It's sustainable. We're upcycling. We're choosing things in this space instead of buying something new. Let's use what we have on this planet. And I have a really big perspective on that. Speaking of the barrels, the guys that were here before, they didn't want those barrels. So Dinda and I stripped them and restained them and water and covered them so they're okay for outside. He built the tops so that they're high enough that they're comfortable to sit at. And
so that's the patio.
That's patio, yeah.
Wow.
So the barrels out there are on the patio. The lights above the bar are actually recycled plastic made by 3D printers.
Okay, that's kind of cool. Because they're geometric, but they're not. They look really sort of modern.
Uh-huh. They're supposed to hang, like proper pendants. But I thought, let's bring them all the way up, because they look like gems on the ceiling. Mm-hmm.
And it really opens up that bar space even more. It just gives you, it makes this space look just so much bigger.
I think there's a definite feeling to that openness. I mean, if you just listen to where we're sitting right now, you can hear the people in the lounge having a good time. Mm-hmm. You can hear the people at the bar having a good time chatting. And I think that was one of the things that we wanted to keep in the whole place, was we wanted people to be having fun. And when you see other people having fun, you tend to have a little bit more fun too, you know? And I think that's one of the reasons for the open concept kind of thing.
So, husband and wife business, not, I mean, very common, but you also hear all kinds of things about how stressful that is, building something like this. I know you guys have studied together. Tell me a little bit about how you guys decided, how did you divvy up who was in charge of what?
That's a great question. That's the first time anybody's ever asked us that. I think that we both work in different ways, and we both have our strengths and our weaknesses. And I think for us, they naturally fell into place who does what.
At home, we talk about no cross-training, which means that these are my tasks and these are Brian's tasks. So we did the same thing here. Okay, I'm good at this. I'm good at these things. I will take care of the design. I will take care of the project management stuff. I take care of some of, we'll call it the admin perspective. Brian has a palette that is amazing. So when it comes to choosing wine, I mean, he was like, I want you to be part of this. And we talked through almost every single wine. There were a couple of wines that he was like, no, we need these things. But to play to his strengths, he knows how to run a bar. He knows how to manage all of the inventory. He knows how to run a kitchen. So he really took all of that on.
And I was also an engineer first, so construction of things is kind of my jam.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. We're a super nerd couple. She's an organic chemist, and I'm an aerospace engineer.
Oh my God. So now I have to ask, and I almost feel like it's a dumb question, but I also don't think it is. I mean, we're talking about organic chemistry, we're talking about engineering. Why wine?
Because we love wine. I think about the first time I had wine, still in college, and drinking bodega wine, right? In Europe for €2. And thinking, this was the best thing ever. And that's, I want to say that's how we started.
I'm gonna say that for me, it is kind of like, wine is kind of like music. You know, it's kind of there's an artistic nature to it, but there's also a scientific background to it as well. So I think that's one of the things that, aside from the flavors and the aromas and stuff like that, I think the backbone of wine is science, but the kind of the thing where everybody enjoys is the artistic nature of it. So I think the combination of that is kind of what drew us out of science fields and into doing something that we want to be that we love to be surrounded by all the time.
So I mentioned to you earlier, the pricing is something that is super approachable. How did you approach that? Did you choose the wines based on an idea of what you wanted to charge, or did you let the wines dictate?
So, yes, both. I think you always want to let the wines kind of speak for themselves, right? And you take the good ones and you leave the bad ones or the mediocre ones off to the side. But then when you have the good ones, then now you look at price points. And you really need to find something that fits all price points, because there's a lot of well-priced, really good wine out there, and it's just a matter of looking for it, taking the time to find it and kind of price it that way too, because we're not looking to gouge anybody. We want the neighborhood person to be able to come here, and you want a glass of Prosecco, you want a glass of Barbera, bam, you're out of here for less than $20. But if you are, you know, you want to come in here and have champagne, $35 a glass, we have that too. You want a 2015 Haut-Brion, that's on the list also. So it really depends on what you want to get out of it, but we want to make it approachable for everybody.
So tell me just briefly, if you had to pick a favorite wine right now that you are serving, what would it be? First you, Brian.
Oh my goodness. My favorite currently is the white. It's the Viura that we have on the Curious list. It's awesome. It's slightly oxidized. It's got great layering, awesome texture to it. Easily my favorite white.
And Jessica?
That's a good choice. My second choice is definitely the Patnat Rosé. So it's out of Australia, and it's a combination grape. It's white grape and red grape, which makes it really unique, right? So you're not expecting that, but it's more natural style. And I don't know, it's fun, it's approachable, especially for people who maybe are not used to drinking natural wine. It just makes me happy, really.
That's amazing. So really quick, let's end this with, give me your hours and how do people find you online?
Okay, well, hours are easy. We have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're open 2 to 9. Friday and Saturday, 2 to 10, and Sunday, 2 to 8. Mondays, we are closed.
And how do they find you online?
CrushpadWineBar.com or CrushpadWineBar on Instagram.
About 2 weeks ago, I had the chance to visit Q, which, by the way, is spelled KYU, and speak to their corporate executive chef, Christopher Arianis. And he's worked at some of the world's finest restaurants, including 11 Madison Park and Per Se, before joining the Q company. We kicked things off with him explaining exactly what type of restaurant Q is, because it's honestly not like any of the other places I've seen on the Strip, where restaurants usually try to check one of those very obvious culinary boxes.
Q is a box in itself. We are American barbecue with Asian influence. And that's a very broad kind of statement, if you will. We're approachable for everybody. We also have a very big plant-based side of our cuisine, along with accommodating people with allergies, so like gluten-free and pescatarian. But if you were to just kind of put a pin in it, it would be Asian fusion barbecue.
Asian fusion barbecue. Okay, so what are the most popular items on your menu, for example?
Number one seller is the tuna crispy rice, for sure. And then you have the cauliflower. We actually make enough money off of it to donate 1% of proceeds to a nonprofit, which is pretty incredible. We have a big philanthropic side of our brand. Our short rib, for sure, smoked for about 8 to 10 hours, low and slow, served with some accoutrements and lettuce wraps. And then also our fried chicken, our Korean fried chicken. Very, very approachable in the sense of the style. So like a butter chili sauce with the fried chicken. But there's a lot of technique that goes behind it. The brining, the crust, you know, the sauce. So those are probably our top four sellers. Cool.
So Las Vegas has long been a big place for Pan-Asian restaurants, right? And having a Pan-Asian restaurant in a casino is pretty standard. You get a little bit of sushi, you get a little bit of fried rice, you get some maybe some dim sum, etc. You clearly have Pan-Asian influences, but I guess what separates you from that group would be the meat component. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't pigeonhole ourselves as a Pan-Asian, for sure. I mean, there's an influence there, but we're really focused on the wood fire, the smoking, the use of vegetables in kind of a non-traditional format. But we touch all different regions, which then you can discuss kind of that Pan-Asian influence, from Laos to Thai to Korean, Japanese, Cambodian, Brazilian, Tibetan. I mean, there's many different areas. We try to leverage also the heritage and background of our chef team to allow them to be creative and kind of get involved. But our identity is really, truly Asian barbecue.
So when we talk about barbecue, are we talking about the traditional U.S. low and slow, basically? These are long-term, low-temperature, slow smoking of these meats?
So we have a couple of different applications. So one of our applications is the short rib. So that would be low and slow. So 8 to 10 hours, a true short rib, not a chuck flap or something that they may be serving in other places because of the price point. And then other things like the duck, it's a fast flash. It's a fast smoke. High heat, set the skin, just to get that residual smoke flavor, and then it's finished on the grill. And then we kind of reverse also. We grill our tomahawk, mark it and sear it, and then we finish that in the smoker. We also smoke some of our vegetables. You know, we use the smoker as an oven, essentially, which, you know, adds depth, adds flavor, but it's a little bit of your not so traditional style. But the smoker is used in many different formats.
For those of us who are ignorant of the topic completely, are these Asian cultures that you do look to for influences, do they have strong traditions of smoking meat?
I wouldn't say they have strong traditions. We kind of incorporate that in as it's part of our identity and part of our brand. You know, when you get into like French Polynesian, or you get into areas of like the Cambodian influence, there's certain areas that have open fire cooking. You can really find that in a lot of different, you know, areas around the world. We do try to embody that in some aspects. You know, in Thailand, they have a lot of pit fire cooking, and, you know, obviously in different parts of Europe as well. But we don't just sit here and say, oh, you know, this Laos, you know, in Laos, they have, you know, this fish that they only cook in banana leaves underground, in a fire, in a pit. You know what I mean? Like, we're not putting all of our focus on that. We utilize the equipment that we have, we utilize the techniques that we know, and then we pull influence from those other regions.
When one of the first words that you mentioned to describe the style is barbecue, but then I also hear you talk about health conscious, and I think you said that you have a lot of vegan friendly dishes here as well. That's something that places that describe themselves as barbecue are only just starting to recognize that the vegan world can love barbecue too. So how do you cross those worlds?
Don't get me wrong, Lisp, whoever's listening to this, we're not putting slabs of tofu on the grill here. We're just conscious of, you know, utilizing the vegetables more cleanly, cross-contamination with our fryers, you know, really letting the vegetables shine. You know, a lot of people want to incorporate umami into their cooking, and so therefore they use shrimp paste, and, you know, they use, you know, different fish products or seafood products to help drive that umami aspect. We get into like coconut aminos, and we get into nutritional yeast, and we get into other aspects of like plant-based cheese, you know, that's using vegetable rennet and things like that to really drive that umami side of things while leveraging the beauty of the vegetables. And I think that's something that a lot of chefs are just kind of getting more comfortable with or confident with in their cooking. And I've been doing that for a long time. And, you know, when you step into a brand or take over a brand, you know, that's really driven by this barbecue concept, you know, there can be a little hesitation to not want to, you know, cloud the identity that people know and love. But it was really easy for me to transition that kind of vegetable-centric side of the food into a barbecue setting. And I think we've done that very well.
So let's talk about the setting. It's a beautiful restaurant. I'm in it for the first time today. Did not realize the view. I mean, you are front and center on Las Vegas Boulevard, very close to the action. Very few restaurants on the Strip really embrace that kind of energy, and I wish more did. So how do you channel that energy in the restaurant? What's the vibe like in here?
Yeah, I mean, we're very blessed to have the location that we have inside the Fountain Blue here on the Strip. I think it's still, people are still kind of wrapping their head around it being so close to the Strip. I mean, we're, you know, probably, you know, 50 to 75 yards out from being on the sidewalk there. And that's something that we're really trying to tie into our overall dining experience, just having those, you know, floor to ceiling windows, you know, the large open format space, high ceilings, and just the beauty and the elegance of kind of this commercial, like industrial feel, but a very chic, you know, environment, if you will. And tying in the Strip, I don't think a lot of restaurants do that, as you just said. And I think that's what's attracting people to come here, the foot traffic, the people coming from, you know, Circus and some of these other areas. You know, it drives them like, oh, what are those big windows? And then they step in, they're like, whoa, that's a restaurant. Oh, that's a barbecue restaurant. Whoa, they have plant-based and gluten-free options. I mean, we got to check this out. So I think, you know, you full circle, you talked about the boxes. You know, we're a box in ourselves, but within that box, we check a lot of boxes for people. And the view is definitely one of them.
And then what's the scene like when they get here? Is this a loud party place where you're coming for bachelorette party and everybody's screaming? Is it a date night restaurant? And I know, look, and please don't say it's everything for everyone, because that's every chef's answer. But what's the vibe like?
I think we're family oriented a lot. You know, we do try to welcome a lot of different crowds. You know, as you just said, like, you know, we don't limit ourselves. I think what the people that are more attracted to this are the younger generations that are a little bit more adventurous in their dining experiences. But then once people actually come in and eat it, you know, from maybe the more of the baby boomers to, you know, more of these millennials, you know, they're coming in, they're like, holy shit, the food's good. Like, this is a chef driven concept. So we've seen an influx of, you know, many different generations, many different styles of people that are coming in here to eat. You know, this is a very Midwestern driven, you know, area of the Strip. Having Circus and having, you know, Resorts World right there. And I think once people come in and actually eat here, then they're like, wow, like, this is it. I want to come back here, because we're very, very technical forward with our cooking, and we're very flavor forward. So we're very well-rounded when it comes to our, you know, our consumers. We're not having huge bachelorette parties every day, but we do get them, and they come in and they're doing sake bombs, but they're also ordering our short rib and our fried chicken, and they're posting about it. And, you know, they're saying we're going to have our bachelorette party here every single year.
And you are dinner only?
We are currently dinner only. No, we are currently brunch on Friday, Saturday, Sundays, which is transitioning in the next couple of weeks. We do have lunch available right now, but we're transitioning to kind of this lunch brunch esque scene. We're trying to pivot the brand, or pivot the hours of operations to be fitting to the current foot traffic. But we're primarily brunch, or primarily dinner. Okay, cool. We have a traditional true brunch in New York. It does well. It's consistent. And then we brought that to Vegas and we opened with that. And I think the hotel is still trying to get its traction, and we're still trying to figure out, you know, what are the best hours of operations for, you know, this area. So we're, as I had mentioned, you know, in the previous question, we're still pivoting a little bit to see what works best. So right now we do offer lunch. We're transitioning out of that and kind of going back to this brunch-esque kind of vibe with the same dinner 7 days a week.
And finally, I sat down at Bungalow Coffee in the Arts District with our friend, James Beard Award-winning author, Kim Foster. She has a new book, and she will be speaking at UNLV this coming Thursday, April 18th at 7 p.m., and we spoke about all of that.
It's called The Meth Lunches, Food and Longing in an American City. It's about food at the intersection of poverty, addiction, mental illness, in Las Vegas. And so sort of what people are really cooking and eating in their homes, and how people in crisis are eating, and just different than the restaurant scene, just what regular folks are doing with food.
Now, you had done an essay called The Meth Lunches. Is this built out of that, or is this an extension of that, or is this just that with other works?
So The Meth Lunches piece that was in Desert Companion in 2017 is a version of that, is the first chapter. And it starts the book and sort of starts the, it starts me trying to figure out what's really happening with food in Vegas that isn't about restaurants. And so it's just sort of begins the journey for me. And we start there and we end there.
So how long did it take you to research this, and what was that experience like?
So it was about a year of just doing nothing but researching, writing, and then like taking care of my family. Like I didn't socialize, I didn't go out with people, I didn't do anything. I just like put my head down and really talked to people and interviewed people. A lot of the interviews are from people who came to the food pantry that I ran during the pandemic, and we talked a lot about I would run into people who, you know, never have home cooked meals, kids who have never grown up with a home cooked meal, adults who don't get to choose their food, that it's chosen for them and put in boxes and given to them. And so people have a different relationship to food, regular folks, than what we see in these sort of shiny Instagram marketing photos about, you know, beautiful food and, you know, extravagant cheese pulls and things like that, and, you know, $1,000 dinners on the strip. There's like a whole other side of Vegas, and it's just really reflects what I think a lot of cities and a lot of people in cities are going through right now.
I know, or I don't want to say I know, but it seems like you were drawn to some of these topics through your experience with adopting children who had come from difficult situations and their relationship with food and what it meant to them. At least I've gotten some of that out of your writing. Am I correct there?
That is correct. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm currently becoming a CASA representative, a court-appointed special advocate for children. So, like, you know, representing children and advocating for them in the system is really important to me.
So from there, from seeing what your own children went through, from seeing what the people that they loved had experienced, yeah, from seeing what people in their communities, that the communities they were in prior to being in your household, how did that expand to investigating the rest of the kind of at-risk population? You know, how did you say, okay, this, I'm seeing what's going on with my kids, I'm seeing what my kids have gone through. Clearly that piqued a curiosity to go out and learn how others are dealing. And I'm wondering how you made that transition from the very personal of your own family to the broader societal aspect.
That's a great question. I felt like a lot of the problems that we were seeing, challenges that my kids were having, because of family separation and being in foster care for so long and being raised in institutions, that food was actually a really, really important part of that. You know, my son had gone through a lot of food scarcity, a lot of hunger in his childhood, and so his relationship to food was really skewed. And it made me wonder how many people's relationships to food was really skewed. And that led me, for instance, to have a conversation with Johnny Racy, who's called Moose, and she works at Smith's on Sahara and Maryland. And she was telling me about what it was like for her when her mother, who was schizophrenic, had locked her in a closet and starved her as a child. And so you see all these repercussions with food scarcity and what happens to people and their relationships to food, and then their relationships to the rest of the world, because as a child, attachment is about getting food, a sense of safety. So a baby cries, they get food, they feel safe, the world is good. When that doesn't happen, a lot of schisms happen in the neuroplasticity of the brain. And so what we're seeing is that a lot of problems that we have and challenges in our community actually exist partly because we have this weird schism with poverty, and we allow people to sort of be in poverty, and that really traumatizes children, and it prevents them from being stable and living the best of their lives as they get into adults, and that affects all of us.
So these are issues and ideas that you address in your book, and these are also going to be issues and ideas that you're going to be addressing at an upcoming event. So could you tell me a bit about that?
Yes. On April 18th at 7 o'clock, it's a Thursday night, I'm going to be at UNLV at the Literature and Law Building. I think it's 100 or 101. And it is going to be an hour-long lecture. I'm going to be making pozole. So we're going to be eating some really fabulous food and talking about hunger and poverty in Las Vegas.
Is this a ticketed event? And if so, how much are tickets and where can people get them?
There are tickets in terms of RSVP, but it is free. So just come. And if you have trouble getting in for some reason, you can text me. I'm like all over social media at Kim in the West.
So that sounds like a fantastic event. The book, congratulations. I mean, getting a book published, I've only done little tiny ones, and it's so hard to get a book published. So it's such an accomplishment to actually go through all that. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm just glad it's done.
And where can people get the book?
Right now, there's always copies at the Writer's Block. You can also get it at Amazon. It's everywhere that you find books.
And the news is next. This is Food and Loathing.
Would you like a free dinner for two at Joël Robuchon, the only Las Vegas restaurant ever awarded 3 Michelin stars? That's the grand prize in Neon Feast's photo upload sweepstakes. To enter, just go to the Neon Feast app or website and find the link to the photo upload sweepstakes page right up at the top with that picture of the Robuchon dining room. Check out the approximately 90 restaurants and bars that are listed on that page. These are the only restaurants and bars participating in the contest because they're the only ones that have activated the photo galleries on their Neon Feast listings. So find one you like, pay them a visit, snap a photo of some food, a beverage, or just you standing outside in front of their sign, and use the app or website to upload it to their gallery. Limit one entry per email address per day, one for a particular restaurant or bar per month. Find complete rules and details on no purchase mail-in entries at neonfeast.com/contest. It's time for the news. SAFTA 1964 is now open at Wynn Las Vegas. Look, as we've previously reported, this is a long-term pop-up by Israeli-American chef Alon Shaya. It's taking over the Jardin space in Wynn Encore, and it's intended as a fictional culinary prequel to the chef's Denver restaurant, Shaya, which in itself is a tribute to his grandmother. Shaya, of course, means grandmother. So the Mediterranean restaurant here at Wynn will attempt to imagine what the chef's grandmother was like in 1964, taking a journey to Las Vegas in her Thunderbird convertible. It's a cool story. I look forward to seeing how it's realized. I'll let you know when I get my ass in there. Thinking of going in tonight. You around?
You know what? I'm not, but damn it, I want to go. I was just going to say,
I may pop in.
Please Pine do. Beach. I want to hear all about it.
Awesome. Moving on to Southern Highlands, Pine Bistro is preparing to introduce that neighborhood's first Mediterranean-inspired brunch on Saturday, April 27th. It will run Saturdays and Sundays from 11 to 2 with dishes like chili shrimp bagel, a chicken and waffles. They have Mediterranean waffles. Mediterranean waffles. I don't know if I got that right. But okay, I'm going to go find out. But that's what I have in my notes. So that sounds cool. As well as a hookah menu for those who enjoy a good puff. I've yet to make it into that one, but this sounds like a good excuse to remedy that.
Hell yes. Oh my gosh. So like I mentioned, for baseball fans or maybe just fans of a good hot dog and beer combo, Tailgate Social at the Palace Station Hotel and Casino is hosting Monday Night Sluggers from 4 to 9 p.m. Guests can enjoy two ballpark hot dogs and a draft beer priced at $10 for the combo. The all-beef hot dogs are topped with ketchup, relish, mustard, and the option to add bacon, cheese, jalapenos, sauerkraut, and onions for $1 each. I'm sure you can make whatever combo your heart desires out of those. In addition, guests can choose from one of Tailgate's 27 beers available on tap, including various lagers, ales, IPAs, stouts, wheat beers, and domestic brands. Of course, we're going to encourage you to drink local, so always ask your bartender what they've got on tap. Over in downtown Summerlin, Harlow Steakhouse and Bar has announced their April Prix menu with a Japanese theme. Priced at $95 per person, it includes 3 courses plus a dessert. The menu is very seafood forward with something for the meat eaters out there as well. My advice, go with a few people and try all the options. Those options include trout sashimi or lobster chawanmushi, which is a savory dashi custard with seafood. There's also a sea urchin ramen, a halibut, or wagyu, one of two ways. For more information, find a profile of Chef Gina Marinelli with more information on the menu, neonnews.vegas.
And that is about it for this week. Thank you to all of our guests. I'm talking about Kim Foster, Chef Christopher Arulianis, and the team from Crush Pad. On behalf of Samantha Gemini Stevens and our lurking partner, Rich Johnson, I'm Al Mancini, thanking you for listening and reminding you to always stay hungry.